You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
BJSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to the double-headed dream team of Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. Viv, starting with you, US inflation down to 3%. It was expected by the market. Month on month, it went up 0.1%. But the market loves this, and the market seems to be going up because it wants to go up, and it's got this incredible momentum, Viv.
Yes, it does. I mean, it's 0.1% lower than expected. We've had some slightly weakish job numbers come out from the U.S. as well. And I think the market wants to cut rates. I mean, one thing you must not ignore is the Fed basically understands that. I think currently the U.S. is paying over $1 trillion in terms of interest payments, you know, for servicing the debt it has right now. If in the next like year or so, I think the debt goes at the current rate, it goes to about $300 billion extra. Beyond that, if the current debt is rolled, or the debt that's due to be rolled next year or so is rolled. So they need to start cutting interest rates reasonably soon. Otherwise, you know, $1.3 trillion is a lot of money even for the U.S. per year to spend on interest payments. So they have to do something soon. And I do think that the market understands that. And we are seeing a situation right now where, you know, any kind of excuse is going to be used to cut rates. And I think that is pretty likely we're going to see September come through this year.
Yes, I wonder if that's politically influenced as well. I wonder if Mr. Biden or whoever's in power will phone up Jerome Powell and say, listen, do us a favor. We can't have Trump in the White House. Can you cut rates quickly, please? And another one before the election, an emergency cut or something. Viv, I'll stay with you on this one. It is obviously unlikely, but I think most people would agree with you. September is a rate cut month.
Yeah, I think it is. I don't think it's going to be enough to help Biden or whoever's going to replace him. I think that's an absolute. I mean, I don't understand. You know, sometimes politicians, you must understand, we always have the belief that some politicians are venal and some politicians are noble. Understand, they're all the same version of scumbag, effectively. Right?
Nicely put.
I mean, seriously, like if you think about it, right, Biden is behaving like a scumbag. He is literally putting his own personal, things ahead of what he has admitted is a very big danger to the country. This is a move as bad as anything Trump has ever done. What he's doing right now is as bad as anything Trump has ever done, because he knows what the thing he's risking is, and why is he risking that? It's because of his own personal
ego. Exactly.
Yeah, this this is exactly what he's doing. And the thing is that if he had done it, like, you know, say 6 months ago, you know, you would have genetic, whoever it would have been, you'd have a proper primary by now. You'd have had everyone in, like, you know, sorted out, and you'd go into the election with a significant chance. As it is, what's the best outcome? He gets kicked out. He basically has a chaotic primary, chaotic conference, right? And then you have, whoever it is in there, and they have no tangible name recognition. Americans are not that, put up on politics. They don't even know who Gavin Newsom is. They don't even know who Gretchen Whitmer is if they don't basically live in those states. It's going to be a walkover for Trump. And it's all because Biden literally put himself before country. It's a scumbag move.
Yes, I totally agree with you. It's very, very selfish. It's very ego-driven. And David, when I look at Biden, and occasionally you have to get a little bit personal with these things. You got George Clooney coming out yesterday, who's a big donor and big fundraiser for the Democratic Party, saying, it's enough now. It's like Mike Tyson, for goodness sake. He's got a prize fight coming up, and he's 58 years old. And he should really know that he should just stop fighting now. Maybe he's fit, maybe he's not. Who knows? But Joe Biden is the prize-fighting boxer of the political world. He looks just ridiculous, isn't he? Why is his eyes are wide? He looks confused all the time, David.
I think, you know what it is? I think after that debate, I think we're all starting to look at him with a different view. And all of a sudden, what we've known all along is becoming more pronounced and more obvious. And I think, as Viv said, I think people are really getting annoyed now and can't understand that at this point that he continues. Even Nancy Pelosi has come out not supporting him. She hasn't said it outright like that, but, I mean, it's quite obvious. I don't know what her exact words were. But as you say, California or the Hollywood has gone against him. Democrats, you know, certainly some leading Democrats, are now starting to talk out against him openly, and he won't take you know, he won't take the bait. It's enough. And I'm with Viv. I just, you know, this is going to be a walkover. And I think, as Clooney said, I think take your head out of the sand, you know, and stop burying it in the sand and hoping that some miracle is going to happen. It's not.
No. And so here we are mid-July, David, and the election in mid-November, end of November. Yeah, exactly. So there's only months to go. It's not like you've got a couple of years to rectify the situation and put somebody in. I still think, I don't know why Blinken isn't put forward, but anyway, probably a personal issue with him. But it looks like there will be a landslide, a Trump victory, unless there's a miracle turnaround in the next few months. It's a horrible prospect.
It's worse than you think, right? They are coattails, right? They are coattails. People don't vote just for the normal, like, you know, like normal congressional elections as much as they vote for the presidential election. So if you're not enthused by the president, you don't vote as much in the Congress. You know what I mean? So what's going to happen is people aren't going to be enthused by Biden. They're not going to vote for Biden, but they're also not going to vote for the Democratic Senate because they won't go vote at all.
Yeah.
And so what you're going to have is right now, I would suspect there's maybe a 1 in 10 chance or 1 in 5 chance that the Democrats retain the Senate, because right now they have to retain the Senate because of the VP, and they are likely to lose straightforward, even if the VP is Democratic, the Senate. They are likely to most certainly to lose the presidency, and they'll probably lose the Congress as well. Because Biden is going to discourage Democrats from going to vote for the first place. You know what I mean? And so it doesn't take a lot. And so you'll have Trump in power with the Republican Senate and a Republican House and a Republican Supreme Court.
Yeah, which they've already got, actually, because they were placed there by Trump. But yeah, it's going to be a political monopoly, in other words. And Trump, of course, can do whatever he likes because of that Supreme Court saying that, you've got, what's the ruling that they came up with, Viv? It was to do with he has limited liability or something. So in other words, if he wants to get out of something that he does or has done, that can happen. And it's a dangerous situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So if he can argue that anything he did was as the president or not as a private citizen. So for instance, if he argues that he authorized a bombing or something as the president, that's legal. The argument is if he can argue that he is doing something as a president or not as a private citizen, that's immune. But that's not the biggest one. The biggest case for this marker is something called Chevron. I don't know if you heard of that.
Go on.
Okay. So the way the U.S. works is this, right? They have a system in place where the Congress passes laws, but these laws are very vague. So they may say protect the air, but then the EPA goes and says, then you must have this, 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 and this to make sure that you protect the air. So they institute legislation. And since it's been done, I think it was in Reagan's term, right? So this is about basically 30 years ago. It's been cited 18,000 times. This would be 18,000 times. So it's important, okay? This basically gives like the EPA the ability to regulate pollution. It gives the SEC the ability to regulate the stock market because they can go and say, we judge you. They become the judge and the enforcer of the rules. You know what I mean? That's why you get ruled against by the EPA. You get ruled against by the SEC. This new ruling says the EPA and the SEC no longer, and all those kind of guys like that, all the different departments no longer have the right to judge anything. They can say you broke the law, but that final adjudication must be done by a court. So if you are basically going to say, rule against a company, and the company says, oh, why don't we just put this in court? Let's see what happens. You know what I mean? And it's going to be a case where almost none of the regulations that have been enforced over the last, say, 3 decades will be enforced anymore in the same way, because if the company has enough money, they will take the EPA to court. And maybe the EPA doesn't have the ability to fight, you know, different kinds of companies all over the place. So it's going to be the most impactful thing because effectively it's totally changed how corporates are going to be governed in the US.
It's interesting, isn't it? And by the way, if you don't know the acronyms EPA and SEC, it's Environmental Protection Agency and Securities Exchange Commission from Viv there. But David, the US legal systems tends to tie people up in knots, doesn't it? I mean, here we've got a phone call where Trump says, I need to find 12,000 votes, whatever it was, to some official in Georgia. And they still can't take him to court and say, okay, well, here's the clear evidence. We're going to charge you. It's an amazing country when it comes to lawyers and attorneys and whatever else there are.
It's funny, in some cases, as we saw with Madoff and other financial frauds, it gets done immediately. One, two, three, done.
Yeah.
You know, and yet in other instances like this, which you're citing now, it just never ends. And you've got the difference between, you know, state law and federal law and city law, who knows, but it does go on forever and ever. And, you know, if you cast your mind back to January the 6th to 2020 and you think about it, and now we're 4 years down the line and nothing's been done. It's three and a bit years down the line.
Yeah.
You know, you can't believe that we're in a situation like that. When you go and see those images of those people storming the Capitol and there were deaths, and so on, and you can't believe that. I know that certain people have gone to jail over it, but no one high up has taken any responsibility or been cited as being responsible for that.
That's also been reversed, you know, David. Some of those have also been reversed.
Yes.
The Supreme Court came out and said, I think about 250 or 300 of the cases against the January 6th guys have been reversed. Yeah, so because of the, they've appealed and some of those guys have been reversed as well.
And if Trump comes in, he'll pardon a lot of them because he sees them as refugees. He's called them refugees. First of all, he called them patriots. Then he called them refugees. I think that was the word that he employed. But anyway, he'll come in and they'll all be out, which is extraordinary. It's like a Putin-style regime they'll have there with under Trump, I think.
But the other thing is the Supreme Court. I mean, this is your last body. This is the body that's supposed to be removed and was created to be removed from politics. You know, it's supposed to be a free-thinking, liberal-thinking, open-minded, balanced court. And yet, all these sensitive moves are 6-3, 6-3, 6-3.
Yes.
Six Republicans, three Democrats. Six Republicans, three Democrats. I mean, it's insane.
And also, remember, if Trump wins now, right, so there's two guys in the Supreme Court that are Republican that are going to either retire or possibly pass away in the next, say, 4 years, right? and that's Thomas, I think it's one more other, right? And so what Trump will likely do if he gets in charge with the Senate in there as well, is he'll put in two Republicans there. So he's got basically, he would have guaranteed that there's at least another 10 to 20 years of a Republican majority in Congress, irrespective of what the president is. Okay, because what happens
is...
It's for life. It's for life. So irrespective of what the president is going forward for the next 20 years, it's going to be a Republican Supreme Court, no matter what.
Yeah, but okay? I mean that you say it's Republican.
It's not just Republican. This is extreme right wing, in my view. That woman that was voted in there, strict and religious right winger. She comes across as a family woman, but she's extremely right wing. So it's not just Republican, David.
Yeah, no, I know, but you know the whole thing is that you've got to understand the demographics of the United States, how it's changed, and they no longer, as we saw with the abortion law, they no longer reflect the feelings of the women of the United States.
Yes.
And I think this was going to be the one area in which Trump was going to come under a lot of pressure and probably lose the election. Now that's gone. You know, it's not even an issue. In this case, you know, the fact that he had upset so many women about the freedom of choice, now it's not even an issue. A certain percentage might not come and vote as well. But I think what Viv says is so relevant.
Yes.
That if you don't go vote for the president, you just don't rock up to vote. So you don't vote for your congressman as well. And I know there's another, you know, they split it. It's every 2 years. It's halfway down. But still, it's going to come out as punishing for the Democrats. They're just in disarray, just total disarray.
Yeah, they're like the Tory party, actually. They're like the Tory party in the UK. I mean, look what happened to them, that landslide. It's sad. Anyway, we're talking too much about politics now. But Viv, you can conclude our political argument. Off you go.
And on the UK, it's weird. You know, Labour won the biggest majority that they've had, I don't know, in forever, with less votes than they got in the last two elections.
34%, yeah. Mm. It's a strange system. You can have some tiny little village in Suffolk or something near Ipswich who's got 12 voters, and they win, and they get an MP. I mean, obviously being frivolous here. But it's a very strange way that the UK does it. But as you quite rightly say, Viv, the smallest ever, I think, amount of people that voted, if you take the population as a whole, proportional representation, and yet they can't even get all their MPs into the House of Commons because they've got so many seats. They have to bring it. Some people have to stand up now when it comes to Prime Minister's questions time on a Wednesday lunchtime. It is very odd. But it's a classic example of the Tories messing up and people just saying, well, I can't vote for them, so I'll vote for Labour or the Lib Dems. I quite like the Lib Dems.
But what I want to point out is that the fact that Labour got to such a slow vote, that means the UK system, I think, is ripe for massive disruption.
Yes.
And I know you joked about reform here. They got, I think, 4 seats in the total at the end. But if you look at what Labour looks like right now, and I don't think Labour will be able to solve everything because no one will be able to solve everything in the UK at the moment, you know, and they won't do it in 5 years. I'm telling you right now, there's a significant chance that in 5 years' time, the opposition party to Labour, or which was what the left is going to be Reform. If you look at the French election, Marine Le Pen's party, right, got more votes than the two parties that had been the number one and number two parties in France for the last 50 years since World War II. That is like they absolutely been destroyed, those two parties, in terms of the thing. And I think something similar is about to happen in the UK. And in a way, that's what's kind of happened to the Republican Party in the US as well. We're entering a period of very high uncertainty politically.
I don't think that France and Britain can be compared, actually, Viv. I don't think that Nigel Farage, who is a loathsome creature, in my opinion, and some of his MPs will ever gain the respect and support of the UK population. In France, they're very volatile. And again, I'm generalising here, but I don't think that that's going to happen. I think the UK is too boring for that.
Compared to Marine Le Pen, and compared to that party, and compared to Zemo, which is even worse. Look at what those guys say. Nigel Farage is far, far less right-wing than Marine Le Pen or the AfD. The AfDP, it goes for the German party, that's like the second biggest party in Germany, said not every SS officer was a criminal.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. They're dragging up the Second World War now, aren't they? Yeah, good gosh.
And Second World War. And this is the person that I think is the second biggest party in Germany by votes. You're talking about Marine Le Pen's party. I mean, they were people from the Vichy regime, you know what I mean? And Zemo is more to the right of them, and they're getting big votes. I'm saying to you, the UK has held on for a long time because of the system of first past the post. But it's good to keep the stability. But once that system breaks, it's just becomes such a it's a much more vulnerable system than the French system to actually getting somebody like Nigel Farage in power. The French system with a two-tier thing where you have first and second tier voting makes it less likely for the extremists to win. The UK system makes it more likely for the extremists to win. It's weird.
Yes, it's very weird, but it's a passing phase. I promise you it's a passing phase. I know we are now in a pre-war society rather than a post-war society, and I keep on hearing that phrase, but I do think it will pass. And when people have got more money in their pockets, they'll say, why am I voting for Nigel Farage? I don't need to reform anymore because I can afford to have a mortgage on my house. David, the JSE Securities Exchange is going along nicely. It's chugging along, but corporate news has been very thin on the ground since we last spoke.
Yeah, very little. In fact, nothing. I think the only thing we've been waiting out for is that Pick n Pay is going to have a 4 billion rand rights issue, and we're just waiting for the terms. Apart from that, there was absolutely nothing again on the JSE. I've been watching the volumes very closely.
15 billion, right?
Yeah, we've been down in the 30, yeah, just over 15 billion today. And I think on average, we've been doing around about 13, 14 billion a day. So there's no trade behind this. This is, you know, which I find very, very disturbing. I think just the mystery, is, I know you're going to talk about the CPI number that came out of the United States, but, which I thought would be very good for markets. I thought, you know, after last night, listening to Powell, markets were very strong. We had a close in the United States, big moves on all the indices, particularly the S&P and the NASDAQ. And today the inflation numbers come out and everything's reversed. Whatever went up yesterday strongly has given back today. And I'm saying, who was buying it yesterday? Why are they selling today? And I think my and this is for discussion, I think what's happened is that everyone now expect rates to come down, so they're now starting to get out of their high tech into rate sensitive stocks.
Yes.
More so. But I mean, to witness what's happening.
Yeah, in the last hour and a half or so, the S&P has fallen 0.5%. But you've got to look at the big picture, David. I know you're a screen watcher, as Viv is as well, but your bigger picture is the bigger picture. It's the S&P is 5,000 points higher than where it was in 2008, which is unbelievable. 5,668 or something was the high today. It's down a little bit from then on, but it doesn't matter. And the thing about a bull market, I mean, I'm preaching to the converted here, is that it's a beast that needs feeding all the time. And when it gets hungry, then it comes into your room and starts to bite you. So, yeah, it's a funny thing. Viv, the market's going up because it's going up, but if it gets the slightest bit of bad news, could be vulnerable to the downside. And that's what worries me. Okay, it may only be 5-6% or something and will still be higher than it was this time last year. But Viv, even as an AI devotee, you must be a little bit worried. Please tell me you're worried.
Look at the Russell 2000, guys.
Okay. What's the small cap, medium cap index?
Look at Russell 2000. Be shocked. Up 3.5%.
Yeah, I know. That's my point.
Yeah, they're doing a switchover. They're switching over from the big cap tech companies to the small companies that are going to benefit. So the market isn't down. The market is not down. The market is actually just turning over from the big caps, which have a disproportionate effect on the S&P, to the small caps. And that's just a turnover happening. So the market is looking at this thing as being like, as a positive overall, because you're expecting all these little small cap companies to start doing very well, because you don't longer need to be in the big companies that are like the safe havens. 3.5% of Russell is, I mean, if you look at it year to date, the Russell is only at 5.5%. So it's done most of its move for the year right now today. And this is a big move for the market. It remains to be seen whether or not this carries on. But the AI portfolio has done, I just said in my latest statement today, we just passed 32% year on year.
Very good. Today. Congratulations.
I think a couple of things going off today because, like I said, the big tech companies are falling right now.
Advertisement was brought to you by Rand Swiss.
That's what happens. As soon as you reach peak wealth, somebody comes and kicks the box from underneath you.
But tell me this now, both of you, with your giant brains, what is the economic cycle synchronicity between big caps and small caps? Because you suddenly highlighted the Russell 2000 in the United States. Do people, when the economy is about to bottom and start to move higher, or interest rates are about to move lower, does that favour the small caps? Because the small caps can go out and borrow money and start to expand their business. How does that work, David?
I think they're more geared to that. You know, they're the smaller businesses that would have gone out and borrowed. So any reduction in rates has a big impact on their bottom line. You know, the big caps, the one thing about those big caps, the Magnificent Seven, is that the economic cycle didn't affect them, meaning tightening monetary policy. So all the measures of the Reserve Bank, of the Fed, had no impact on them because they were just flush with cash. So I think that was the, you know, so they were able to escape the cycle. And I think if you measure it, and I was doing some work today on a five-year view on the Dow Jones, you know, when you look at the Dow, and why I use the Dow, Lindsay, because it's made up of what they think are 30 companies spread across the United States. You know, you'll have Caterpillar, and you have Amex, and you have banks, and you have industrial companies, and it's not only tech. When you look at that, you know, you'll see that this is far underperformed both the S&P and the NASDAQ simply because not every business has benefited. If you look today, and I just took it out as you were talking, I'm going to do it now quickly again. If I look at that, while those markets are down 3, 6, 9, only 9 of the 30 of the Dow Jones are in negative territory. So there's 21 stocks that are positive, which is not exactly what's happening in the NASDAQ, in the Magnificent Seven, and the S&P, which is also influenced by those heavy techs. So it comes back to what Viv is saying in the Russell. You know, if you take that on a broader front, All these little businesses are now going to be, you know, now going to attract attention. What's coming top of the Dow at the moment?
Home
Depot, up nearly 3%. Why? Because rates come down, mortgage rates come down. It helps home builders. You know, more people now feel more comfortable now as rates go down to go and buy homes. So you're getting Home Depot as the top performer.
That's interesting. Because new home sales have been horrible in the United States, by the way, or new home starts, whatever it is. They've got several different home indices. But maybe that's the time to now, while they're at their bottom and looking so beaten up, maybe that's the time to look at these things. Okay, gentlemen, I'm going to give you some prices now. Because the dollar rand is 18.01, the British pound against the rand 23.26, and the euro rand is 19.57. Euro dollar 108.70, which is a 0.3% gain for the euro against the US dollar. That's an interest rate story, obviously. Gold price is doing well. It's 24.22, up 2.1%. That's up $50 on the day. That's an all-time record high, I believe, with a dollar or two here and there. Platinum is also doing well, above 1,000 and consolidating at 1,019, up 2.1%, or $21 an ounce. And palladium has gone from three figures to four figures as well, 1,004 for palladium, up 1.6%. Other commodities?
Yes, Mr. Wayne McCurry might be vindicated, you know. Just give it to him.
It's always interesting because you mention Wayne McCurry when I'm speaking to you, and he mentions, as he calls you, Shapiro, when I'm speaking to him. We were talking about you yesterday, about being a natty dresser, because he buys his clothes from Pick and Pay. And he was saying that Shapiro, as he says, doesn't. He's very natty, despite his age. But anyway, that's another story. Brent crude oil is up 0.4% to $85.37. And West Texas crude is $82.38, which is a third of a percent up as well. Natural gas price is down 2%. Copper's up down 2% as well, $4.51 a pound, and continues its fall. But anyway, the commodities important to South Africa, most of them, doing rather well. Thank you very much. Now, the S&P 500 futures, they have turned around, over half a percent weaker now, 5,656. That's at September's futures. This is an interesting one, though. The U.S. 10-year bond yield, 4.17%. Yeah. That's a big, big move. It's a 2.4% move to the downside. Mm. The South African 10-year also doing very well, 9.78%. What else have we got here? Bitcoin, because I have to, 58,000 and a bit, up two-thirds of 1%. So, yeah, a pretty good day, David.
It is, and I think it's strange that, you know, that some of the big indices are down, but, I mean, what has been, you know, the big story is that inflation did come down, and now it's almost 90% certain that you'll get a rate cut in September. Some are even calling a rate cut in the United States for June for the next meeting. Mm. I'm not sure they'll be that quick to reduce rate. Remember, they're still concerned about the underlying economy, and that is a worry, particularly the weakening labor market. But what you know, the story is also that because of that, you know, people are getting out the high end of the market, the big caps, into smaller caps and those that are sensitive to reduced rates. So big moves there in that direction.
Very good.
A local market, yeah. You know, just on the local market.
Yes.
Likewise, I would have expected more. But I think it did prompt a little bit of buying in the banks towards the end. You know, if you look exactly at the time that the CPI came out, which was a 2:30 hour time, our market spiked, and we got a little bit of a boost because of that. So, from our point of view, we're up pretty nicely.
Viv, before I get onto the moves on the JSE today, do you say to yourself, having had this conversation and seeing what's happened to the Russell 2000 index, do you say to yourself, okay, I've made 32% over the last whatever period it was, I can't remember what you said, but anyway, you've done well from your AI portfolio. Do you say to yourself, there are AI companies coming through the ranks, and therefore I should maybe take a little bit of money out of the likes of Nvidia and search for a new company that might benefit from the AI boom? Is that your thought process?
Not at the moment. The reason being is that, you know, when it comes to AI and the stuff that's happening right now, understand that the current lot of machines, the current lot of programs don't really add enough value to the global economy. It's worth, you know, maybe tens or maybe hundreds of billions of dollars worth of added value. But NVIDIA is worth, you know, $3 trillion. You need to see what the next step is going to be. And that's going to be like the GPT-5s and so on. And so far, the indications are that GPT-5 is going to have a huge increase over GPT-4 in capability. That's been backed up by Sam Altman, what he said recently. The CTO of Microsoft came out and said basically he's like 99% sure that we're going to be impressed by what GPT-5 is compared to GPT-4, which indicates that in the next couple of months we're going to start getting new programs coming out that are going to be as much better than GPT-4 as GPT-4 was than GPT-3, which would mean that you'd be seeing things that are able to do things that you've never imagined there before. It was like, you know, it's like how in first when you had the AI stuff not doing spaghetti with Will Smith, and now you can barely spot these videos which are AI generated, or like the fingers being weird with the AI photos, which you can't spot anymore. It's very difficult to spot them right now. If we get to a point in the next round of AI where it can do stuff without the hallucinations, I think the market is going to be still quite pumped up about these companies, and therefore I think if you are believing in the theme, you don't want to be disinvesting right now.
Lindsay, there's a good article in this morning's FT, Unhedged by Robert Armstrong on NVIDIA. You know, with every NVIDIA article that you get, there's going to be cynics, and it always ends with a health warning. Yes, but. But the big but is that they expect 120 billion sales this year. That for some reason they end their year in January. Over the next 4 years, that's going to double. And the big question is it going to deliver what everybody expects? But on the other hand, what they say is you can't take that risk. In other words, you can't take a step backwards. And I think this is what Viv's saying with GPT 3, 4, 5, and so on, is that you can't take a risk and not get involved and not gear your companies up for this and understand what's happening, even though you may not be able to see what the benefits are. And that's why I think the spend on AI is going to continue. You know, the infrastructural spend and the spend just gearing your businesses up, and that's going to last for some time. So I'm with Viv. The shares are going to go up and down. We're looking for new businesses. You're always looking for something new. But it's like I call it like the Champions League or like the Premier League. You know, if you're going to get rid of if you're going to add one, you better get rid of one. So is the worst one? You know what I mean? Is the one you want to introduce better than the worst one you got? So
it's very interesting staying in the market, because I was speaking to a very senior European Microsoft executive who I've come to know over the last few years, and he's going to be retiring in a couple of years' time. And he said I was given shares when I joined. $30. It wasn't that long ago. So they're now, what, 460 or something like that? And he held on because he was forced to hold on. And he just stayed there. Look, from 30 to 460, he's made himself a fortune just from being a regional executive of that incredible company. So, two are holding AI shares and tech shares. I know that certain people would get really, really fidgety and say, well, maybe I should take some out and put some in this, etc. But no, just sit there and let it ride, which you obviously both have.
If Viv put $100,000 into his AI portfolio, that's now worth $132,000.
Yeah.
You know, in how many months? No, 6 months. You know, that's okay.
It's been 12 months. Just been,
that's just okay. You know. If he would have put it in the 10-year bond, it would have been worth 104,000. Yeah.
And if you put it in the JSE in dollar terms, it would be worth
2,000.
The same as it was. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's not do a JSE bashing session. Let's talk about the top five up and the top bottom five down on the JSE today. Life Healthcare up 4.1%. Mr. Price, the retailer, up nearly 4%. Pepco, another retailer, up nearly 3%. And Harmony, 2.9% higher. Downside Bites down 6.3%. Tiger Brands down 2%. Ital Tile, if we need to talk about that one, a good company, down 1.9% though. We Buy Cars, down 1.9%. No mistaking what that company does. And Musk, the property company down 1 2/3. David, any to add to that?
No, I think you've covered most of them.
Good.
I just, you know, the big ones. There's, again, we mentioned the value trader, which was pretty low. But it's interesting to see retailers up today. And I think just money piles in just on the strength that rates here are going to follow the United States start coming down as well.
Okay, just quickly the indices, David. You've given us the value traded, okay, which is negligible, but the closing JSE indices, please.
So the all-share index at 81094, that's up 0.81%. The resource index up 0.5%, 0.43%. Banks, I think that's where most of the action was, 1.6% up, that bank index up. The broad financial, which would be the banks as well as the insurers, just up 1.1%. Consumer discretionary, which is all the retailers as well as big companies like Richemont and that, up 1.5%. The broader industrial index up just under 1% at 0.9%. But green across the screen. You know, I think all those indices are in the green. Probably gainers beating losers 2-1.
Okay, well, that's very good news. Now, gentlemen, the next time we speak, we will know who are the Euro football champions for 2024. On Sunday evening at 9 o'clock South African time, England will face Spain. So I need your predictions, please. They've got this orangutan at Berlin Zoo, I think, who picks the winners. You know, that octopus used to do in the World Cup. But anyway, you are the orangutans today. And I'll start with you, Viv. England or Spain, please. Your heart and your head here, please.
I don't know what it is. It's like with the World Cup, you know, the Rugby World Cup. You always just felt there's something about South Africa. England is getting out of these things with some kind of, like, you know, anything is luck. But I think sometimes, you know, sometimes fate works in your favor. And it looks like England's had fate on its side this particular tournament. So I'm going for England.
Okay.
I think you're right.
Both of you, there's a consensus here. Yeah. Don't say that because of my delicate sensibilities when it comes to football. No. I want you to do it analytically, please, Shapiro.
I do. I just think they've got a better team. You know, when you actually put them as a team, I just think that they're better positioned to beat Spain. If they played like they did the first half last night, they run on the ball, but, you know, especially after they were stung by Netherlands' first goal, I think they can do it. And they've got incredible reserves on the side. They've got what they call, they're not substitutes, they're replacements. What do they call? I don't know, what did he call them, Gareth Southgate?
Finishers,
yes. I think they've got very good finishers.
So you're telling me Lamine Yamal coming up against Kyle Walker, Kyle Walker will prevail. Is that what you're saying? Have you seen this little 16-year-old kid? He terrifies me. He's brilliant.
You haven't seen Kyle Walker take on little 16-year-olds. He just gives him one of those stares. You know what I mean? He's not playing against some. He's playing against Kyle Walker.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's a thug. We'll see, yeah, he's a thug in comparison.
Total thug.
I love him.
And Trippier, have you seen Trippier? You want to get in a dark alley with Trippier, even though he's about 5'2".
Yeah.
Now you're mad.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your for your insights, as always, on a Thursday. David Shapiro is from Assessment Securities, and Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.